Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has had direct experience both in the uniform of the United States Army as a Green Beret and as a very accomplished and, need I say, courageous war correspondent in most of the flashpoints in this war for the free world all over the world, is our first guest. His name is Michael Yon. He has covered for a whole variety of media outlets very dangerous situations ranging from Afghanistan and Iraq to Nepal, the Philippines, Thailand, Hong Kong, even the capital of the United States on the 6th of January, a man whose insights and expertise I've been wanting to tap for some time, and I couldn't be more thrilled to have him here for two segments. We'll talk with him a little bit. It'll just whet your appetite for a longer conversation, which I hope to have with Michael Yon in the very near future. But Michael, for the moment, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you at last.
Hey, Frank, it's great to finally get on. I've wanted to get on your show for a long time, so let's do it.
Good. It's good to have you with us. Maybe we could start with where you are at the moment and what you're covering there, what you're seeing, and what you make of it.
Well, right now I'm in the country of Panama. I'm near the Panama Canal, but I've been down in the Darien Gap, down in the Darien province. Darien is the province which borders Colombia. It's it's that little strip of land there. Well, this whole country is a strip of land. But I'm going back down there tomorrow. I've been tracking migrants as they come through Colombia. So I was at the Capitol attack, and then I went down to Texas and covered the border there for a while, Mexico, and then I shot down to Colombia because in Colombia is of course the northernmost country in South America, where extracontinental migrants come in. They'll go to Ecuador and Brazil, and then they funnel up to Colombia through Panama. But to get into Panama, they go through what's called the Darien Gap. It's some of the most intense jungle in the world. When people say jungle, Darien Gap is what they have in mind. It's 60 miles, more than 60 miles of no roads, terrible mountains and huge rains. And of course, there's a lot of disease in this particular part of the world, more so than a lot of jungles I've been in. It's famous for that. So we've got thousands of migrants coming in per month this year. And about the first, it's unclear on the numbers, but it looks like it's about 11,000 migrants in the first 4 months or so of this year that have come through. And they're coming from all over the world, including Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan, Bangladesh, India. I've met quite a few Nepalese. I've met mostly, there's huge numbers of Cubans and Haitians, but they're from really, I would say, at least 50 countries that are funneling through, including Iran.
And let me be clear, where are they headed, Michael Yon?
United States. They come through, they'll land in Ecuador and Brazil first because they don't need visas. So if you're flying in from, say, Nepal, you can get into Brazil or Ecuador, and then from there just bus up to Colombia, and then you hoof it over the Darien Gap if you survive. A huge number don't live. They get robbed or drowned or murdered out there. Many just vanish or die of diseases out there. Those who make it are, I wouldn't say welcomed into Panama, but they're taken into reception centers, of which I've been to those. And actually, though, on the 20th of May, so just some days ago now, 5 days, Panama closed the border. Panama closed the Colombian border with the ground and sea borders with Colombia, because Colombia is just allowing so many people to come in from all over South America, and Panama is worried about CCP virus. And so Panama really shut down hard last year in 2020. I mean, people were really under almost house arrest. I mean, the entire country, it was worse than New York. I mean, they were really locked down. So Panama is quite concerned, and they've just shut down the border 5 days ago.
So Michael Yon, you talk about these extra continental folks coming in from countries that have been identified as associated with, well, Sharia supremacism or other terrorist entities, and they are headed towards the United States. Talk a bit about your perceptions of the likelihood that they're going to get into the United States. And if they do, what at least some of these people, many maybe just economic migrants are looking for a better life, as is generally the case. But if there is in that number some portion that are coming here to do us harm, what are the chances they're going to get in here to do it as things stand now?
Extremely high. Extremely high. I believe there was, 14 Iranians that were caught in, I believe, Arizona a few months ago. Actually, I was passing through Arizona doing border work when that happened. I wasn't near where they were captured, but yeah, I mean, they come through all the time. I mean, there's people that are coming through here from Yemen, from Somalia, from even Gaza. There's people that are coming through from Bangladesh. I meet Bangladeshis all the time. Indians, Pakistanis. So I mean, they're coming from everywhere under the sun over there. So if you want to come into the United States without detection, if you're especially under, because everybody, I wouldn't say everybody, but the people that want to lose their passports in the Darien Gap certainly lose their passports in the Darien Gap. And then others lose them. For instance, one, I believe it was a Haitian man told me recently, he lost his just swimming across the river. And so many, you know, lose them because they get robbed or from whatever reasons, you know, there are out there. But if you want to come in under a false identity, Darien Gap is the place to do it.
And so as you're watching this situation unfold in that gap and in the areas that have to be transited north of there, I assume that what you're seeing is a marked difference in the way that the Mexicans, for example, have been treating these transiting individuals from what was the case during the Trump years, when the Mexicans were really, I think, at least towards the end there, playing a rather significant role in trying to help tamp down the immigration flood. So is that a correct characterization, that the Mexicans are now allowing that flood to pour forth? And if so, you mentioned 14 Iranians were captured, but talk as well about the getaways, as they're called, and what kinds of numbers we may be seeing of them that have these sorts of personal histories or proclivities?
You know, the actual numbers of getaways would be difficult to know, because some of these actually clearly have their own underground railways. For instance, some just come through with no connections whatsoever. There's others that are using side channels. They're not coming straight through the normal. Like, for instance, most of the people that come through Darien Gap, they'll emerge in a village called Bajo Chiquito, which I've been to twice, and I'll be there again soon. Bajo Chiquito is out in the Darien Gap. You can't, tourists never go there. It's way beyond the tourist line. And and they emerge, many of them shoeless, because they lose their shoes out in the mud. So they've been walking for days with no shoes, raw feet, that sort of thing. But there's others who go around on different routes. And these, like, for instance,
hey, Michael, hold the thought. We've got to take a short break. We'll be right back with Michael Yon, talking about some of his insights from monitoring the influx of illegal immigrants coming to this country through the Darien Gap and from all over the world, and what it might mean for you.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and we're continuing our conversation with Michael Yon, one of the country's most intrepid and, I would argue, accomplished war correspondents. You think of a place on Earth where there has been a messy conflict, a civil war, crisis of some other kind, an invasion. Michael has been there, and he's covered brilliantly what is afoot. He's the author of Danger Close and Moment of Truth in Iraq. He's a former Green Beret and men I've come to admire greatly, and we appreciate your time today, Michael Yon. You were talking a little bit about the kinds of folks who are getting through the Darien Gap, and I just wanted to ask you about Mexico and what seems to be the role it's playing at the moment. Is it helping as it was during the Trump years, or is it now essentially just an open sluice for people coming here?
It's an open sluice, certainly. We can see that just by our own numbers down at the border. I was down in Texas and New Mexico right after the inauguration in January. I went straight to the border, and within that 1 week, it was immediately an upsurge. And I reported that back then. I think I had reported that the Border Patrol down there in El Paso said they saw a 300-400% increase immediately within the first week or so, which a lot of people seem to think was out of line. And I had no basis because I hadn't been there in a long while. But then it's turned out to be true, if not worse. And now keep in mind, the people that come through Darien, by the way, they go through Panama, then they end up in Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, and then they go through Tapachula, Mexico. Tapachula is sort of like the El Paso of Mexico. It's on the southern border with Guatemala. And many of the migrants stay there so long that they have local cuisine restaurants there, like Nepalese, Bangladeshi, African type restaurants. So there's migrants who stay there in southern Mexico for quite a while, and then they move north and finally spread out. For instance, the Haitians will tend to come across in San Diego area. Different sorts of migrant groups will have their own, you might say, lonely planet routes that they will tend to go through.
This presumably feeds them into communities that will take them in or otherwise try to help them, blend into the United States. And when you, just a quick overview, Michael, is it fair to say, based on your firsthand observations, interviews, and experiences, that there is a national security threat arising from the kinds of policies and the consequences of them that have now been put into train by the Biden-Harris administration?
It's a massive threat, and it's got various faces. This threat has more faces than a Hindu god. I mean, it's got the one threat is just repopulating the United States with people who couldn't make their own countries work. I mean, let's just be honest. If they're coming in from Haiti, they haven't made Haiti work in 200 years. I mean, a huge number of these are coming in from Cuba and Haiti. Venezuela, of course, has melted down. 2 to 3 million Venezuelans in Colombia now, as Colombia now melts down. And now, Colombia, of course, feeds right into Darien Gap. I mean, we've got a huge number of people coming. Keep in mind, I've spent most of my life in other countries beyond the United States. I've spent well over, say, 60% of my life in countries like India and Nepal and Bangladesh and that sort of thing. They have a hard time making their countries work. Now, I'm all for immigration. I think we should take 100,000 Hong Kongers right now. But at the same time, repopulating the United States with people who can't make their own countries work is a bad idea. Some fish just will not mix well in the same aquarium, and we're bringing in too many at once. Look what Europe did. I spent 6 years in Europe. Europe has basically put a gun to its own head with especially Merkel and her policies, and it's just unbelievable. We're setting now. There's that aspect. There's other aspects. For instance, terrorism. This is certainly a feeder. And then there's other aspects. For instance, pandemic. The reason that that Panama just closed its border 5 days ago with Colombia was pandemic. Now we've got people walking through thousands of people per month from four different continents with naive immune systems, coming through an area which is being deforested. People are hungry out in the Darien Gap. They're eating anything that they can find. And then they're coming up and they're getting on buses from, at least 50 different countries. And I've been watching them load up on these buses and come up on buses, and they're going straight to the United States.
And then they're put on buses or planes, even in some cases, and sent all over the United States, evidently. It does seem as though there's a problem here, not just with a demographic transformation of the country, but as you say, of absolutely inseminating into it, potentially, not just the Chinese Communist Party virus, or as you call it, and I do too, but who knows what other diseases as well. This is a troubling problem of the first order, Michael Yon, and I appreciate so much your analysis of it and look forward to further updates from you about it. But I did want to switch gears because among the other hotspots that you have covered in recent years is the rioting that has taken place in the United States at the hands of principally two prominent groups, Antifa and Black Lives Matters organization that has been the driving force behind much of the agitation that's taken place since George Floyd's death a year ago today. Talk to us a little bit, Michael Yon, about what you have seen, what you've personally witnessed about these groups, especially against the backdrop that, amazingly enough, the Biden-Harris administration has ordered our embassies around the world to hoist the Black Lives Matter organization's flag over U.S. embassies today. What's that about? And what are the implications?
That's insane. That's insane. I didn't even know about that until you told me. This is actually, I mean, that's like hoisting the Ku Klux Klan pillowcases over the U.S. embassies. BLM, Antifa, and Ku Klux Klan should all be rightfully grouped together as domestic terror organizations. When I came back to the United States last September 2020, I went straight to Portland. I went to Portland because of the BLM and Antifa issues there, and I stayed there for quite a while. I was out on the streets with them, listening to them talk, watching the things that they did, attacking the police, destroying local businesses. And then I was over in Atlanta doing the same. I was over in Philadelphia. And then I was in Washington, D.C. for probably 6 to 8 weeks watching the fighting. In fact, I stayed down at the Capitol Hilton at Black Lives Matter Plaza, which is, you know, it was right outside my window. So I was out there in that mess nightly. It was just the things that they're doing are absolutely terrorist. And this is a Marxist march is what it is. And the United States is down. This is truly an existential threat to the United States as this continues to grow. The United States is certainly at risk to civil war. You know, they'll say in war, amateurs talk about tactics and professionals talk about logistics. There's a corollary to that, that amateurs talk about sparks and professionals talk about conditions. And the conditions are set. When the conditions are set, the spark will come. There's always sparks. I'm looking out at the rainforest here in Panama now. That's raining, actually, in the rainforest, not incredibly. And, there's plenty of sparks out here, but they don't catch because it's raining. But the United States right now is becoming a dry forest. We're getting to the point where we literally could go into open civil war. And it's clearly growing at a rapid rate. The conditions, if there's an economic meltdown in the United States or conditions continue to worsen, we could see certainly states moving to secede. We could see roads shut off. This is really a very serious situation.
And the knock-on effects of all of that would be horrific. Just as one example, roads closed, especially for tactical purposes, by Antifa organization or Black Lives Matter group can have a very direct effect on the ability of those communities that are cut off to get food, to get other necessities of life pulled into them. And that's how, again, the conditions can translate into something horrific for this country. And I appreciate so much your insight in this, Michael Yon, because you've actually watched people take down governments around the world, haven't you? You've seen these sorts of techniques and tactics employed by Marxists and others who are determined to impose their will over usually a larger majority, I assume, and get away with it in at least some of these cases. So I think these admonitions have to be very much taken to heart.
Yeah, the conditions are set. I mean, there's many, you know, I've written 3 books on Chinese information war, and there's many information wars going on, by the way. There's not just China and not just Russia. We are in a jungle of various information wars, and it can be hard to sort out who's who in the zoo. But certainly information war, organizations and nations that have strong information war programs. I mean, a strong information program is as powerful as a strong Navy. It's really that powerful. And the United States is under sustained intergenerational information war, and it's adding up. And it's really getting to the point now, and it, certainly with opening the borders and so many other things going on at once, that I don't see at this rate, I don't see us going any other direction at this point other than civil war, because we don't have leadership that's trying to ameliorate the symptoms. It's just growing. The virus is growing very quickly.
To say nothing of actually enabling or legitimating some of those who are trying to precipitate that civil war, which is how I view this idea of putting the Black Lives Matter organization's flag over our embassies. To your great credit, Michael Yuan, just another extraordinary feat. Those three books you've written about Chinese information operations, I understand, are written in Japanese. It sounds like we need you to get them translated right quick because we certainly could use them in this country. Anyway, there's very much an appetite on the part of the Chinese Communist Party to foster the conditions that will conduce to civil war or other kinds of takedowns of this country. So we need your insights on that, Michael Yuan. I hope you'll come back to us for the further conversation about this and more very soon. I appreciate what you do and how you do it, and your great reporting on all these subjects. And people, I understand, can find you at michaelyuan-online.com. Is that right?
Right, or on Patreon. I publish on Patreon almost daily. I'll have something very interesting in about 4 more days. I can't talk about it now, but something very interesting is about to unfold, and you'll see some of it in the news probably, and then other parts I'll publish on Patreon.
Good, and we'll have you back to talk about it too. Michael Yuan, again, thank you for your time today, my friend. God bless you. Next up, Gordon Chang talks a bit more about China, what it's up to, what it means for you, right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back, and a special welcome to our next guest, whose presence here I always consider to be one of the high points of our week. His name is Gordon Chang. He is one of our country's preeminent authorities on the threat we face from the Chinese Communist Party and what we best do about it. He is the author of a number of very important books, including most recently, The Great U.S.-China Tech War. He is also a very active contributor to the public policy debate on this program, Fox News, and elsewhere, as well as at the Gatestone Institute. We're going to talk about his recent publication there momentarily. But first, welcome. Gordon, it's good to have you back as always.
Thank you so much, Frank.
I caught you early this morning talking with Maria Bartiromo about the latest developments on the provenance of the Wuhan virus, or as we're fond of calling it here, the Chinese Communist Party virus. It seems as though there is a growing sense, even with Tony Fauci, that that may well be the case, that it was maybe an accidental release from a lab, but it was from a lab nonetheless. Give us the latest on it, if you would, Gordon.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that three researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in November 2019 fell sick and were hospitalized. This really fits in with earlier reporting from the State Department. There's a January 15th fact sheet, which talks about researchers at a Chinese institution falling sick with COVID-19-like symptoms. And it's another indication that there was an accident of some sort at the lab. There's also reporting, which is not confirmed, but does appear to come from the U.S. intelligence community, about a period of something like 2 weeks in October 2019 of no cell phones emanating from the lab, another indication of an unusual event there.
The trouble is, Gordon, to some extent, that as we discuss this more intensively, which I welcome, we still haven't really gotten our heads around the fact that that laboratory and others in China apparently are associated with a People's Liberation Army illegal biological weapons program. What do we know about it? And why is it that that isn't getting more attention? Because it does seem to me as though whatever one thinks of the COVID disease, the virus, the pandemic, that activity, illegal activity, is an ominous development that should be getting a lot more attention, shouldn't it?
Of course. In the last couple of months, we've been hearing more about Chinese military researchers, not only at the Wuhan Institute, but at other biological facilities across China. This is from, among others, Dr. Li Minyang, who is the Hong Kong virologist who escaped from Hong Kong April of last year. Also, we are learning about things such as, for instance, that Major General Chen Wei, who is described as China's top biological weapons expert, was actually in January of 2019 assigned to the P4 biosafety unit of the Wuhan Institute. This was late January of 2019. And clearly, why would she be there? We know that the literature openly talks about in China about biological weapons. So for instance, there's a lot of play recently given to a 2015 book by Chinese military researchers that goes into detail China's doctrine of biological warfare. Also, the 2017 edition of the Science of Military Strategy, which is an authoritative publication of China's National Defense University, talks about a new type of biological warfare of, quote, specific ethnic genetic attacks. Bill Gertz in the Washington Times actually quoted a U.S. official who was anonymous, but who said that the U.S. is deeply concerned about China actually engaging in type of pathogens. There's more evidence that there is a biological weapons program there. And we have done very little to talk about this in public. Why? That's a question which is very involved, but clearly we should be talking about it now.
I couldn't agree more and appreciate you doing so here, among other places, Gordon. Let me turn to your latest piece at Gatestone, in which you warned about the implications of something the Biden administration has announced it intends to do. I'm not quite sure what the status of this initiative is, but tell us about the notion that we're going to turn over to the Chinese Communist Party, among others, the seed corn technology involved in the vaccines that have been developed to try to treat these various, coronavirus and other diseases.
Well, this month, Catherine Tai, who is the U.S. Trade Representative, announced that the United States would support a proposal by South Africa and India for what's known as a TRIPS waiver. TRIPS is the Trade-Related Aspects of Intellectual Property Rights Agreement. And the TRIPS waiver would permit countries in the World Trade Organization not to enforce protections for intellectual property, patents, and trade secrets for COVID-19 vaccines. In other words, that the two revolutionary vaccines by Pfizer and by Moderna would receive no patent protection if this proposal were to go forward. Now, a number of other countries at the WTO next meeting are very much against a TRIPS waiver. The real issue here, there's two. One of them, of course, is if you give waivers to intellectual property rights protection, I mean, are we going to be able to develop at warp speed the next vaccines for the next pandemic, which certainly is coming? And second of all, this benefits China. And once you help China's vaccine industry, that gives them more incentive to conduct biological warfare because they could vaccinate their own people and therefore sicken everybody else. And this is not a theoretical concern because what we know about the Chinese biological weapons program, and indeed the Biden administration is backing this big giveaway. This is, I believe, the worst decision yet made by the new administration.
Wow. And there's a lot of competition for that distinction, dubious though it may be. Gordon, I guess one other piece of this, even if it's a somewhat more benign repercussion, is you create the basis upon which the Chinese will become, as they have often done in the past, the dominant player in yet another field of medical research and technology and products, creating another hollowing out of our technology and industrial base and a dependency on a very dubious source from China for medicines. I can't imagine what they're thinking. And do you anticipate that this proposal will die in the WTO?
You know, I don't know enough about internal WTO politics. And the one thing that nobody knows is how much pressure the Biden administration will apply to other countries. If it applies a lot of pressure, it will get a vaccine waiver. If it doesn't, this proposal will die. There's, you know, a number of very disadvantageous outcomes from this, which we haven't talked about. But let me just mention one of them. And that is China, as you point out, would develop. They can't develop vaccines. They had a head start on COVID-19. They came up with vaccines. Five of them, none of them have been proven safe. most of them are barely effective, if effective at all. And what we're seeing really is China lagging behind the U.S. But really, when you think about this waiver, it is not patent protection that is protecting the creation, making of vaccines. It's the raw materials. And as a practical matter, this patent waiver, if it were to go through, would actually slow the delivery of vaccines to people in the world. So this is not only from a China-related aspect is this horrible. This is actually horrible for the people who will be vaccinated because they won't get them as fast, because there will be a scramble for raw materials by companies that want to make vaccines that won't be able to.
Fascinating. And I commend to all of you Gordon Chang's newest piece at the Gatestone Institute, which is gatestoneinstitute.org. It's entitled Biden's Worst Move Yet, Giving U.S. Vaccine Tech to China. Gordon, let me quickly ask you about another subject that you follow closely. You are the author of a terrific book entitled Losing South Korea. Give us a sense of what went down when Moon Jae-in, the president of South Korea, visited the White House last week with a dubious agenda, shall we say, and what came of it?
Yeah, very little came of it except one thing, and that is the U.S. military alliance with South Korea, which Moon Jae-in abhors, was actually strengthened. There were a number of very specific proposals to strengthen the alliance, and that's a good thing, because we're trying to wait out Moon, who, if he were up to him, would break the alliance and would unify with North Korea, move the unified Korea into China's camp. Both Trump and Biden have been very subtle but firm, and they've been shutting the door to Moon's very malicious activities. And the strengthening of the alliance, which was evident from the documents which were issued at Friday's summit, really is a very good thing, including, since we're talking about vaccines, President Biden's commitment to vaccinate all 550,000 South Korean airmen, soldiers, sailors who work with U.S. forces. So that's a really important move on the part of the Biden administration to strengthen the alliance. We need to keep that alliance in place after Moon. And that's, you know, I can't say enough about this. David Maxwell of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies is the leading expert on this. And he's been talking about alliance matters in this is an important initiative.
Well, it's heartening and somewhat surprising, I think, to say that we may have bought ourselves at least a little time. Moon, as I understand it, has another year or so to go in office, and some considerable mischief can still be made there. His inclinations towards North Korea and towards China are very problematic, as you have documented, Gordon. We thank you for visiting with us and to provide that important update, because if there is a little bit of good news here, it's certainly welcome in an otherwise dark moment. Gordon Chang, we appreciate so much what you do at the Gatestone Institute at Fox and certainly here. Thank you for joining us today, and look forward to a visit next week. Next up, we will speak with Bill Walton. We'll talk with him about inflation and the Federal Reserve and what it means for you right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. It's time for our weekly visit with Bill Walton, a man who is a former financier on Wall Street, now a blogster of renown in his podcast, The Bill Walton Show. He is also a driving force in the conservative movement, now with the Conservative Political Action Conference team. And I am very pleased to have him here as a regular on our program. Bill Walton, it's good to have you with us.
Frank, Yeah, Frank, great talking with you.
We promised last week that we would get into your thinking, Bill, on what the Federal Reserve is up to at the moment. It seems to be signaling that there's no problem with inflation, and it's going to keep interest rates low for the foreseeable future. What's actually going on in that regard, Bill, and what is the Fed doing about it?
Well, let me give you some context. In 1978, there was a terrific book by Charles Kindleberger called Manias, Panics, and Crashes. And at that time, he quaintly suggested that the market excesses, speculation was all a private sector phenomena, gold, real estate, et cetera. But what he failed to foresee is that the speculative excess now is caused by government. And both the Federal Reserve and the Treasury are the speculators, along with all the other central banks in the world. And what they've done at the Fed is they basically tried to manipulate the market so that interest rates no longer reflect, views about risk and return. And no one seems to be really focused on the fact that we've added almost a third of our, trillions and trillions of dollars of debt. It's almost one third of the federal budget GDP that's been added in the last couple of years, and it's the highest debt to GDP is the highest it's been since World War II, and both the fiscal policy and monetary policy, that's the Fed, have piled on. We've got this relief checks which have been sent out, and two thirds of those were sent out after it was clear that the vaccine was working and the economy was recovering. Consequently, we're seeing consumers spending like never before. Construction's booming. Lumber prices are up 400%. We've got labor shortages because of the direct relief checks. One of the mandates for the Fed is to set the price of money. It's no longer doing that. It's just trying to keep the party going. And I'm very concerned about their lack of discipline.
I am too, Bill. And I don't know nearly as much about it as you do. But talk specifically about the prospects for inflation, given the forces that you just described.
Well, if you look across all the basic commodities now, interestingly, with the exception of gold, which hasn't gone up that much, they're all up 5, 10, 20%. I mentioned lumber, which is completely through the roof. And some of that is because of the economy readjusting to normal supply chains. And there's a lot of shortage that were caused by the politicians shutting down the parts of the economy that they deemed non-essential, which was a bit of a hubris, which was insane at the time and is insane now. We're paying the price for that in higher inflation in prices, but also assets. The net of this is we're seeing the stock market at the highest valuation ever. It's caused this craze in cryptocurrencies. And there's also something that's kind of arcane for people, but they've been launching something called SPACs, which are special access, special purpose acquisition companies, raising billions and billions of dollars for reasons yet to be determined. So there doesn't seem to be any grown-up overseeing this. The thing long-term that we all need to be concerned about is that the Congressional Budget Office projects that in 20 years, maybe sooner, I think probably sooner, almost a third of all our federal revenues are going to be used to pay the interest on federal debt. And right now it's about 8%. And if you see inflation going up, you're going to see interest rates going up, and interest rates go up when the federal debt, our 8% right now is at record low interest rate levels or near record. If it goes up doubles, triples, we could see half of the federal deficit going to pay interest on the debt. And that's a terrifying prospect.
It is indeed, especially for those of us concerned about national security, because one of the things almost certainly that would be impacted would be our ability to fund the United States military and our.
One other point to make on that concern is that if you look at last year in the midst of all this emergency funding, treasuries, which have long been the preferred asset for international investors to hold as a safe asset, stopped buying them. And they aggressively sold treasuries because they didn't like what they saw as the fiscal and monetary policy here in the United States. If the United States loses its role as the dollar loses its role as the reserve currency, Katie bar the door.
We will come back to cryptocurrencies with you next week, I think, Bill, but there's a lot to talk about in that department too. But this inflation thing bears considerable watching, I think, and I appreciate you doing it with us. I wanted to turn in the remaining time we have with you, which isn't a whole lot, Bill, to an interesting development for those of us who have long been deeply suspicious of what the official narrative has been concerning the so-called insurrection on the Capitol on the 6th of January. And this is now being brought to the fore again in connection with the initiative of the House leadership to spawn a new 9/11 style commission to investigate what went on that day. There's a report in the Epoch Times about a fellow by the name of John Earl Sullivan, who it describes as a political activist who reportedly attended Black Lives Matter protests last year and who allegedly agitated rioters inside the Capitol, has been charged with a number of misdeeds by the Justice Department. Bill, what are we to make of this? He seems to be an agent provocateur, if I'm not mistaking what we're reading about him here.
Well, you mean if he really was a member of Black Lives Matter and was attending all of the Black Lives Matters rallies and riots in the year before? He was arrested at one in Utah where he was egging people on, and there was actually a murder of a policeman at that riot. But you know, we long suspected that there were people inside that march that had other agendas, and he seems to be Exhibit A. I mean, he came in to the Capitol yelling at everybody, "We got to get this sucker burned."
I think he used more colorful language than sucker, but he was talking about burning it, that's for sure.
Yeah, he also came in with a video with an iPhone or whatever he did. He taped it, and he had another agenda besides political. He said, "I can make a fortune. I can make millions of dollars with this video." And evidently, he sold it to various news outlets for, I think, a total of $90,000. So he was making money.
This happened to be a video of Ashley Babbitt being murdered.
Yeah, the only person who was murdered was one of the people on the Trump side of the argument, and all the other deaths there were natural causes. So this was one of the most one-sided reportings of this. Frank, the news blackout of this, though, is the thing I'm concerned about. We've got a commission that people are talking about. That commission is worthless unless we've got a bipartisan group of people who are members of it. And, you know, we both have been concerned about the blackout after the election, when nobody was allowed to speculate that there may have been, if not fraud, serious culpability on the Democrat side to bring about outcomes. We also saw the same news blackout when it came to COVID reporting and masks and lockdowns. So there's anything that doesn't seem to fit the progressive Democrat narrative, we're not allowed to talk about. And so I'll be surprised. This article came out in the Epoch Times, which reports the truth. I doubt very seriously we'll see this in the New York Times or the Washington Post.
Well, I think it's all the more reason why we wanted to bring it to the attention of this audience, because I think it's imperative that people, you know, are aware of this kind of evidence in order to help them overcome the canceling, the silencing, and the false narratives that are being compounded.
We have friends who were there at the Capitol, and they watched what was going on. And there were people from out of town. They were in a march, and they were invited into the Capitol. And 99% of them were incredibly respectful. They were a little bit like tourists looking at the place. And none of, compare that to Portland, compare it to Minneapolis, compare it to Kenosha. And this one-sidedness is something that all of us need to be mindful of 100% of the time when you hear something on the news or read something in the paper.
And not go along with a stacked deck, a rigged game in a commission that will just propound this false narrative, unfortunately. Bill, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you for your time today, my friend. Come back to us soon. Bill Walton, always appreciate your visits. Hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.